right, and welcome everyone. We are live here and now. This is The Holistic Way with Dr. A. I'm Dr. Jean-Paul Lamonte. We got a great one for you today, as we'll be doing some soul-to-soul healing. We're talking holistically about the physical soul, the spiritual soul, and the deeper meaning of life.
Welcome everyone. I'm Michael, and as always, I'd like to give all of you listeners a little background on Dr. Amante. He's a licensed chiropractor, massage therapist, and hypnotherapist with over 20 years of clinical experience. He received his undergraduate degree in psychology and biology from Wake Forest University, and then went on to earn a doctorate from Palmer College of Chiropractic West after completing his training at the Casey Riley School of Massage. He has been an author and educator for over 2 decades on holistic natural health. He currently maintains a clinical practice in Virginia Beach, Virginia, where he offers his signature Total Body Tune-Up. You can schedule a treatment or consult with him at the website hhcare.org, that's hhcare.org, or you can follow him on YouTube at Holistic Healthcare and on social media at Holistic Natural Care. My first question for you, Dr. Monte, is what is the holistic soul? And how do we keep our souls healthy?
Well, it really does begin right where you're standing, right? And so cueing back to one of my favorite songs growing up by REM, which is Stand, right? Just stand in the place where you are and start at the foundation of our body, which is obviously your feet. And so isn't it fascinating the degree to which we call the bottoms of our feet our soul? And hence, I love the play on that word of soul-to-soul healing. So what we're going to be talking about today is literally right where you're standing, from the bottom of our feet and the foundation of the body, from our soul all the way up to this aspect of the universal soul. So of course, when we're talking holistically, we're talking about the whole person, right? We're talking about physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And one of the fathers of holistic healing was Edgar Cayce. And one of the most commonly given quotes is that the spirit is the life, the mind is the builder, the physical is the result. But first, know and realize that you are a soul. And I think the holistic soul is really the whole soul, right? That's where the word holistic comes from, is the whole. So realizing that everything you've ever been, everything that you are, is the concept of this overarching oneness of your soul. And so past, present, and future, all these things ultimately are recorded on this soul level. And so from this oneness, right, and you can see this as either the unified field of energy that was identified by Einstein, or the collective unconsciousness that was described in great detail by Carl Jung and many others, or just this overall idea that everything in this universe is connected from that one source, from that one soul, is where we emanate this life force energy. And that life force energy is that spirit which imbues us, which brings us alive, and creates this idea of motion that is simply expressed in our thoughts and our physical body. And so this connection of as above, so below, really comes down to the soul on that universal level of the whole, all the way down to your physical soul right there at the bottom of your feet. And so how do you keep your soul healthy? Well, first and foremost, you just got to connect to it, right? Connecting to who you are on the big picture, what is your purpose here, but more importantly, keep your feet healthy, folks. Now, as a chiropractor, this goes a long way. I mean, we learn this from the osteopaths and even physical therapists, orthopedists. Everyone recognizes that the structure of the body inherently relates to how healthy it is, how much pain we have, and how well it functions, right? So structure and function. And nobody disagrees with this, right? Just like if you take your house and you shift the foundation, it will not take long for you to see the stresses and forces all the way up through the rafters. And over time, things will start to wear, tear, and collapse. So if you keep the structure of the physical body healthy and aligned, it is going to function at its best, and more importantly, it's going to feel good, and it's going to minimize the amount of pain that you experience. So you have to keep your foundation balanced and even, and that goes all the way down to the feet.
So what are the best ways for us to take care of our feet?
Well, considering that when you look at the feet, they are absolutely packed with nerve endings. They're embedded with all these lymph vessels. And so one of the best things that we can do is simply to stimulate the feet on a regular basis. Isn't it strange how, you know, we've been conditioned to wear shoes, which the first thing it does is cut off most of the sensation, and it forces the feet to move in a certain way in a certain position. So when we consider taking care of the feet, the most important thing is to spend some time every day barefoot, and especially on soft surfaces. And so there's a lot of research now on grounding. That is just kicking off the shoes and socks, let your piggies go free, and get out in that soft, natural earth. You can even measure the change of the body's electromagnetic frequency. Just take a little voltmeter, test it on your body. Go stand barefoot on the ground and literally see your own electromagnetic frequency change and ground. And there's now lots of evidence that as we do this, it decreases pain, decreases inflammation naturally. So 10 to 15 minutes minimum every day should be spent barefoot on the ground. Now, I'm getting ready to run my fourth marathon here coming up this weekend. So as regularly training the body, I always make sure that at least once or twice a week, I'm doing strides barefoot in the fields. And obviously, folks, check for any hazards, right? Check the fields to make sure there's no animal waste or hazards and so forth. But find a safe, comfortable place of soft grass and just running in your natural form and stride, and feel how the body will adapt and run differently. There's a lot of published information on this. In fact, probably one of my favorite books that was rather controversial but really well written was Born to Run, which challenges this idea that wearing running shoes and certain types of shoes are natural benefits to running. And should we be running barefoot? Well, I'll go ahead and answer this question right now from my professional perspective, which is yes, you should be wearing some type of footwear, right? Because when they looked at a lot of these native tribes in South America, they're all wearing sandals, what they call huaracas, if I'm even pronouncing that correctly. But they would just simply take a piece of tire tread and strap it to their feet. So even those folks were wearing some type of protective footwear as they're running across the mountains and out in nature. The most important thing is getting the right type of shoes. So when you study the feet, you find that as we walk, and obviously as we run, there's a natural turning motion of the foot called pronation, right? And so what you'll find is that as the foot naturally pronates, you want it to essentially start right around the heel, and as you roll off to your toes, you want most of the force to come right between the first and second metatarsal, that is right between the first and second toe. If you kind of overdo this, it's called overpronation, or if you underdo this, it's called supination, right? So the word supinate simply means to bring up, right? So if you're to hold a bowl of soup in your hands, you have to turn your palms up, right? And so that same concept is as you stay kind of on the more outside portion of your foot, which is what I do, you tend to be called a supinator. And so the type of shoe you need to wear needs to match your foot's pronation pattern. And so for those of you here in the area of Virginia Beach, my favorite store of all time is Running Etc. Or any place that will literally watch you run, look at your gait, which is the way that your legs and your feet move, and look at how you pronate to make sure you get in the right type of shoes. So as a supinator, I need to wear neutral cushion shoes. If you overpronate, you might want to focus on stability versus the more natural cushioned if you have that regular pattern, right? And so matching the right type of shoes to the right type of pronation is very important. There has been this movement towards the minimalist type of footwear, which is that we don't want to put too much cushion underneath the feet, right? Because again, you don't want to remove all of your foot's natural sensations. So you'll find that as you walk barefoot on concrete versus sand versus grass and dirt, your feet are going to naturally adapt to whatever surface you're on. In fact, if you've ever found that walking outside and maybe you do step on like a sharp burr, right, a pine cone, or even a piece of glass, that your foot will actually naturally contract and mold itself around and oftentimes will prevent from any type of puncture or any type of wound because you have all the sensation underneath your feet. So one of the best things we can do, spend a little time barefoot on the ground every day. If you do any type of exercise or training at the end of your session, or maybe even at the beginning, do a few strides, maybe of about 100 feet to 100 meters, and start off nice and gradually, but then work up to like all out, flat out pace, and just feel the difference. And certainly if you're at home and you have a lot of hard floors around your house, you want to make sure you have some type of arch support. So again, if you have a really hard, firm surface, like a hardwood floor or concrete, especially if you're at work and you're on this type of surface, you need to have good arch support. So one of the best ways to take care of your feet is make sure your arches are supported. So for those of you that tend to be more flat-footed, this is important. For those of you that tend to have very high arches, again, very important. Considering one of the strongest structures in physics is the arch, right? The Romans discovered this years ago and built an entire city, an entire empire around the concept of the arch. Well, when you look at the foot, it doesn't have just one, but has multiple arches. You have the ones that run from your toes to your heel, but you also have the arches that run side to side, called these lateral arches, and they've all got to be supported. And so if your shoes or your footwear tends to be very stiff, or if you've had them for a while, you might want to consider using some type of arch support. There's a lot of companies out there who love to charge a high premium price for orthotics, and some of them are well worth it. Again, my favorite local store here, Running Etc., they not only put the right type of shoes on the right type of pronation, but also looking at the arches of your feet and making sure that you have enough arch support as you run, but not too much. Because if you consider the nature of an arch, right, a natural arch structure, if you put a heavy surface or a heavy substance on the very top and the very center of that arch, it's going to hold indefinitely. This is why we still see the arches of the Roman Empire still standing after thousands of years. However, how do you undo the strength of the arch is you push from the bottom. You can just take some building blocks, and the simple way to collapse the arch is push up from the bottom. So you don't want to have too much arch support, right? You got to have just the right amount to find that sweet spot. But if you're standing on hard surfaces, folks, make sure you have good arch support, and vice versa. If you want to kick off your shoes when you get home, soft carpets and having ergonomic mats. So consider where people are usually going to stand in one place the most. It's going to be where? In your kitchen. So I personally and professionally recommend having an ergonomic mat to stand on when you're doing your dishes or cooking your food so that you have a natural soft arch support always under your feet.
I see these, I don't know if they're still popular, I know I've seen them in the past, these shoes that kind of almost have like a curved bottom and make you sort of engage stabilizer muscles just while you're standing. Do you have an opinion on those? Do you think those are beneficial for anybody?
Well, absolutely. And again, it depends on the type of foot and any conditions that you're going. So those are typically called rocker bottom shoes. And yes, they're great because it kind of reverses the arch. So it takes the stress out of parts of the bottom of your foot. So for example, if you're having pain under the bottoms of your tarsals called metatarsalgia, which means pain underneath the ball mounds of your toes, the rocker bottom shoe will minimize the force going there. And so it can be very helpful for that. And yes, doing that's also going to help to engage the calves, quads, and so forth. And so it can be beneficial, but kind of, you know, buyer beware, anytime you change something in the body, there's going to be a natural adaptation, right? So if you put on a new type of footwear, you gotta give yourself about 2 to 3 weeks to adapt to it. So don't be surprised if you feel a little sore in some areas or maybe kind of changes things. You might feel it right in your knees, your hips, even your back. As we said, the feet affect everything else, even all the way up to your neck. And so with those types of shoes, they can be very beneficial for certain types of conditions, especially if you have pain. It's gonna engage different muscles in the body if you're looking to tone up. But more importantly, let your body naturally adapt to it. And even after a few weeks, if you're still having problems, then maybe switch your footwear.
So let's start to slowly move up the body here as we talk about how the feet can affect the rest of the body. I suffer from shin splints a lot when I run. Some people have knee issues. Can these problems have their source with the feet and the alignment down at the feet?
Absolutely. And so, especially with shin splints, I'm glad you brought that one up, because shin splints is kind of a misnomer, which means it's not the correct name. It's really tibial stress, right? It's pain, especially in the deep fibers of the tibialis posterior and tibialis anterior muscles. So the correct professional term would be tibial stress syndrome, which often comes from doing too much too soon on too hard of a surface. And so one of the easy solutions for shin splints is to run on softer surfaces, back up the mileage and the distance. And especially if you've had time off for a while, and let's say you're used to, I typically run, 5 miles, for example. And let's say you haven't run for a little while and you try to jump right back into where you left off, and you get shin splints. That's just your body telling you a little bit too much too soon on too hard of a surface. So this is why gradually working back up to that distance is important. Check your shoes and your footwear, and also check your foot strike. So this is one thing that I learned after I read the book Born to Run, and after I did my own personal investigations, because after that I changed my shoes. I used to wear very cushiony shoes, and I started to go to minimalist. And after my feet adapted to it, man, I fell in love with this type of shoe. And for me, it was the Saucony Kinvara, really worked well for me. And now they have a different version, of course, but I recommend everyone find the shoe that works for you. And more importantly too, is listen to your body. So as you start to notice different pain and certain things, it's your body telling you signs and signals. Now, how do you know if it's related to your feet? Well, the simplest way is to go get an alignment check. The same way you take your car in to get regular maintenance and check the alignments of the wheels, especially if you're noticing uneven wear and tear on your wheels and your tires. Folks, if you look at the bottom of your shoes, right, especially the shoes you've been wearing for a while, and you see uneven wear, just like on the tires of your car, that's telling you that there's something off with your alignment. And so to answer the question, how exactly the alignment of the feet affect the rest of the body is whenever one leg is shorter. You could also look at it in terms of one leg being longer, but most professionals will look at unequal leg length pattern, or called leg length inequality. Now, everything can be slightly different, but what tends to happen is this. When one leg goes shorter, and if you can visualize this, right, one foot is slightly shorter, every step that you take with that short leg now, you're gonna have to overpronate, right? It's got a slightly more distance to the ground than the other foot, would you agree? And so what you have to do is you have to overpronate. Now, as you do that, you're rotating and turning in more towards your great toe, your big toe side, which therefore is gonna put more stress on that bunion. And so if you look at your feet, you notice you have more irritation on one side of your big toe. If you see you're gradually growing a larger bunion on that side, as well as if you feel more pain on the inside of that knee. And so the typical pattern is this. The short leg will exhibit more wear and tear and pain on the inside of the great toe, the inside of the knee, and when it comes to the SI joint, the basis of your lower back and your spine, that hip will tend to rotate back posterior and will slightly elevate because it's slightly shortened. So you'll typically see more tightness in the lower back muscles like the QL. And then on the other side, the long leg side, tends to be the opposite. So you tend to have more wear and tear on the outside, the lateral side. So you might have more pain in the outside of the ankle. The bone over there is called your cuboid. So I oftentimes see more fixations, meaning more stuck bones in the lateral ankle. You might have more pain on the outside of the lateral knee. And what you'll tend to see in the SI joint of the hip is that one tends to rotate forward. And as you go up the body, there is a compensating rotation of the spine going posterior. And so the same way, folks, if you were to take a piece of rope and shift the bottom and gently twist it just a little bit, you can measure the change in forces, you know, the twisting and torquing of that rope all the way from top to bottom. And this is why many doctors over many years now, from chiropractors to osteopaths to the physiotherapists, have all found that a difference in leg length inequality affects everything else up. And you'll see this either the ankles, the knees, the hips, the back, the shoulders, and the neck. Those are the most common areas that you'll find. And so get your alignment checked. It's so easy to see this if you just put a person face down on the table, put them in an anatomically neutral position, take the slack out of the legs, and then look from the perspective of the heels, and you'll usually see one leg elevated. Now, here's the important point, according to research, is it's very common for everyone to have some type of asymmetry. In fact, I have never found a perfectly symmetrical body. In over 20 years of practice, folks, I've never found anybody who's perfectly symmetrical and perfectly balanced. I mean, we need to face the reality that we live in an unbalanced asymmetrical world. We tend to sleep on one side. We're one hand dominant. We drive with one side of the body. We tend to cross our legs, you know, more often than one side or the other. There's so many things that we do. We eat with one hand, etc. That simply recognizing the patterns of your body and then doing things consistently every day to balance out those patterns. That's the key. And so with leg length inequality, almost everyone has this. But according to the research, 10% or less on average is an anatomical reason or an anatomical cause, meaning anatomical would be, for example, if you've had a knee or a hip replacement, or let's say you were born or you had one leg shorter than the other when you were born, maybe a congenital factor of the hip, etc. Maybe you had a severe fracture of your leg or your femur, the thigh bone, etc. Those things that are differences in your anatomical structure will cause this. And truth be told, there's really nothing you can do about it. So for 10% or less of the population, it can be strongly recommended to actually put in a heel lift or a shoe insert on that short leg. Now, I know there's a lot of other docs out there, and whatever, this is my opinion, but 90% of the population do not need a heel lift. They are functional short leg patterns, meaning that if you see a short leg, 90% or more of the time, it can be corrected either by aligning the hips, by taking fixations out of the ankles, feet, hips, knees, by releasing the muscle tension. Again, what is the most commonly tight muscle with a short leg is the QL of the lower back on the same side. One of the major actions of the QL, the quadratus lumbar muscle, is literally known as the hip hiker. You can track that muscle. Literally, you hike your hip up. You want a simple little observational experiment? Next time you're in the checkout line, look at how people stand. And almost always, you're going to see someone who stands and they shift their weight to one side, and you'll notice that that same leg will slightly externally rotate. It means they rotate their hip. They lean to that same side, and you can literally see them shortening their QL. So is it any wonder, with all these asymmetrical, these imbalanced patterns that we stand and walk with, that inevitably we're gonna have one leg shorter than the other? Now, there's the most simplest corrections for these things. Obviously, you can adjust the body, correct the alignment. You can work the muscle and release that tension out. I've even seen, you know, and myself included, doing energy work balancing the electromagnetic field can also do this. But the simplest way to do this is simply stretch the muscles around the sacrum and the SI joint. And one of my favorite stretches in yoga, it's called pigeon pose. Typically, most yoga routines will finish with this pigeon pose, which is simply bringing one knee up and slightly rotating it. In a lot of yoga positions, pigeon is done face down, meaning you're kind of laying on that leg, stretching it out. However, the simplest way to do it is lay on your back. Simply bring your knee up toward your chest, guide it slightly out, with the same side hand come underneath the knee with the opposite hand. So if you're bringing your right leg up, your left hand's gonna come over, palm down just above your ankle. And you wanna bring your knee out to the side so that your heel is right in alignment with your nose. So when you get that heel, nose alignment, doing pigeon pose on your back, just gently and gradually bring the leg up until it stops. Now you don't wanna force this one, but just simply holding there about 30 seconds. I usually count about 4 full deep breath cycles and then do the other leg. And you wanna do each leg about 30 seconds and then do this throughout the day, especially if you're having any pain, discomfort, or if you've identified that you do have a short leg pattern. Do the stretch 4 to 5 days for, let's say, about a week or two in a row, and you'll probably notice a difference. More importantly, it kind of gives you a personal barometer in terms of how it feels. You want to make sure that at the end of a yoga session, or if you're doing the stretch at home on your back, one, make sure you're laying on a soft surface, you know, a carpet or a yoga mat, it's very simple. But laying on your back, doing pigeon pose, you want to make sure that it feels even left to right. That the tighter sides you might hold for a little bit longer, so that eventually your left and your right hip should feel the same and even. And that shows you that you're correcting that sacral SI joint alignment by stretching the sacrotuberous ligament and the muscles that go and attach to it. I know people are going to say, oh, you can't stretch ligaments. Well, it is different, obviously, than a muscle tissue, but yes, you can stretch ligaments and you can balance them out with simple techniques such as this. So what's the best way to keep your feet aligned? One, align your feet. And so this is why I wanted to talk about this particular topic in this episode, is that when I'm doing alignments and total body tune-ups, I always, when the patient is lying face down, start at the feet and adjusting all the foot bones. So folks, if your chiropractor, osteopath, whoever you're seeing for your alignment, if they're not adjusting your feet, ankles, knees, and hips, and they're only doing your spine, that's not holistic. And they're kind of doing a slight disservice, in my opinion, and I might ruffle some feathers here. I don't care. It's my opinion. If you don't correct the foundation of the house, it doesn't matter what you do up above in the rafters. Adjust the spine and get it aligned all you want, but if you haven't corrected the feet and taken care of them, every step that you take is going to create uneven stresses and forces and gradually go back out of alignment. And so many times I'll find that the toes themselves, so I adjust all the toes, all the metatarsals, all 7 tarsal bones, as well as the knees, including the tibiofemoral joint, the fibula, as well as the hips and the SI joints. This is so essential. And then look at the spine. And many times, a lot of the correction of the foundation will help with everything above it. Now, this is why I do a total body tune-up. We leave no bone unturned. So we adjust the feet, the knees, the hips, the spine, the shoulders, the elbows, the wrists, because it's all connected. It's all one. And so when you look at taking care of the feet, number one, making sure you're wearing the right kind of shoes for the right kind of foot pronation patterns. Number two, make sure you're doing something every day consistently to keep yourself in alignment. Number three, spending time barefoot on the ground to not only stimulate those natural neuroreceptors in your feet, but also to absorb the natural minerals and the natural electromagnetic energy from the earth. And so another thing that we can do is simply At the end of the day, take care of the feet through natural foot baths and rolling out your arches. One of my best investments ever has been a lacrosse ball for $1.99 at your local sporting goods store. Now, the reason why lacrosse ball is because it has the perfect density and the perfect shape to roll out your arches. So here's what you do. Take a lacrosse ball in the seated position, put it right under your foot, and take a few strokes rolling this ball under your arch. Now lean in and put some good pressure on it, folks, so that you're rolling from your toes all the way to your heel. And it's a natural little self-massage. Now what you're doing is just rolling out your arches, but also what you're doing is you're searching for the tender spots. And just like when you're using a foam roller, you want to roll across the whole area at least 3 to 5 times, find the most tender spot, and then hold with good moderate pressure there. Don't press too hard that it's painful, means you have to guard, but right to that point where it's getting in there. Hold for 8 to 12 seconds, and this is the amount of time it takes to stimulate the GTOs, which stands for the Golgi Tendon Organ Receptors. You see, in the body, you have these GTOs that monitor the amount of tension in your muscles and your tendons. Obviously, Golgi tendons, these are mostly concentrated right where the muscle becomes the tendon tissue. Hold pressure there about 8 to 12 seconds, and you can even kind of vibrate a little bit. So, you know, you kind of wiggle your foot a little bit, or if you're pressing down with your hand on your knee with the ball under your foot, just give a little bit of vibration. It kind of helps to stimulate those areas. Take a deep breath in and a deep breath out, and as you exhale, focus on relaxing the area. And do this at least 3 to 5 times, 8 to 12 seconds, and what you're gonna feel is the area gradually soften down. And this helps to relax the amount of tension in your feet. It helps to reset to a more resting length. This has been the most helpful thing that I've done, number one, in treating and preventing plantar fasciitis. If you think of what plantar fasciitis is, simply the inflammation in the fascia or connective tissue under your foot. This is what's called the plantar surface, is under the sole of your foot. So if you want some good sole therapy, roll your feet out every day. You can use a lacrosse ball. Some people use a frozen water bottle. Just whatever you do, just find what works and do it. That's the important thing. But what I recommend is this. Soak your feet in a nice warm foot bath. And you can even add therapeutic elements to it. One of my favorite is Epsom salts. Epsom salts are packed full of magnesium, which is a natural muscle relaxer. And magnesium is most effective in relaxing muscles when absorbed through the skin, called transdermally. And so you can get a little simple foot bath or water basin, or just dump a bunch of Epsom salts in your bathtub and plug up, you know, the bottom. So in your shower, you can plug the drain, get a few inches of water, soak your feet in some nice hot water. You can use Epsom salts. Other favorites of mine for natural remedies is the mustard foot bath or the coffee foot bath. That's right. You can take natural coffee grounds. Now, please use the organic fair trade type of coffee grounds. Please don't use the instant stuff. That's not real coffee anyways.
It's not a Folgers foot bath. No.
Get a good coffee, and after you brew your coffee, use the used coffee grounds and put it in your foot bath. The acid of the coffee has a really good tonifying effect, and it's also good for circulation of muscles. You can soak it in there, and you can even kind of work it up and massage the coffee grounds in warm water around sore, aching, tired feet. My other favorite, as I mentioned, is the mustard foot bath, a longtime folk traditional remedy. And you don't need a lot here, folks. And again, don't use the squeeze liquid mustard that you, you know, put on other stuff, but use the original powdered mustard, natural mustard. And if you didn't notice, natural mustard is really spicy, man. So we're just talking a little bit, like maybe a quarter of a teaspoon in about a gallon of water. Mix it around, soak your feet in it, you'll see. It'll improve the circulation. It'll help soften the areas around the muscles, the tendons and ligaments of the feet. So some people are like, well, can I do all the above? I don't know if I would combine mustard and coffee and Epsom salts. Just pick one and see how your body responds and go from there. But here's the thing. give it at least 10 to 15 minutes, even 20 minutes for a hot foot bath. Then, once your foot is nice and warmed up, your muscles and soft tissues are gonna soften and relax. Then roll your feet out with a lacrosse ball or whatever you like to use, and then get yourself a good high quality massage oil. My favorite is castor oil, olive oil, and peanut oils. In fact, if you want a good type of oil, just go to the website of Bar Products, you know, right off the website where the podcast is posted at doublehcare.org. You'll see some really good therapeutic oils. And this is my regular evening routine. I tell people all the time, man, I get a massage every day from these pair of hands right here. So if you have a pair of hands, folks, you can be getting free therapy. And so especially for your feet, especially if they're achy, they're sore, they have arthritis, if you have plantar fasciitis, or if you just are training and you wanna prevent a lot of issues all the way at the back of the body, soak the feet in hot water. You can add some good therapeutic elements to it. Then roll your arches out. And just like we said, find those tender spots and focus on 2 to 3 or more of them. And give each one of those tender spots about 8 to 12 seconds, a few times each until you feel them relax down. Then get a little bit of castor oil or whatever type of oil you want and just use what your body will absorb. Massage it in there, work those tender spots, and it'll give your feet and the rest of your skin and tissues that good nutrition. You see, castor oil is like food for your lymph. Folks, peanut oil is like food for your joints. And a regular massage of peanut oil, according to Edgar Cayce, will help prevent arthritis. And if nothing else, just use a good olive oil. Olive oil is like foods for your skin, your muscles, and even your mucous membranes if you eat it internally. Hence why all the research on the Mediterranean diet is really looking good. And so that's the secret combo, or it's not a secret anymore because we're putting it out there. Heat the feet, roll them out, put some good oil, and then have a good night's rest. When you wake up in the morning, you'll see. And do this consistently each night over time, and you will see a difference. How do I know? Because I've done it. I've had plantar fasciitis 3 times of really severe cases, and this regular therapy worked every time. But you gotta be patient, and you gotta be consistent, and you have to correct for any footwear, any imbalance in your leg length and alignment, and the way that you train. And so if you're looking at the way that you're training and you're doing things that keeps coming back, that's your body telling you that something needs to change.
So we've talked a lot about how we can heal our physical soul, the bottom of our foot. But this is a holistic podcast. So let's talk about how we can heal our other soul, our spiritual soul.
Well, first of all, it begins with one's belief, right? It begins with what you believe about concept of spirit and soul. And of course, this can be touchy for some people, but it shouldn't be, right? No matter what religion or spiritual philosophy, or maybe even not, we all recognize that there's something much greater than just this physical bodysuit. I mean, we've all had these experiences of profound connection or just being in awe. Whatever that is, just move your awareness right now into this concept of interconnection with the universe. Now, when it comes down to soul healing, essentially this has to do with what is your purpose here? And if you feel lost, if you feel distracted, or you feel like you're living up to somebody else's expectations, folks, this is a telltale sign that you need to reconnect. You need to get deeper in touch with yourself, with your soul. So who are you is the question here. And you have to answer that question. If you can't, you need to spend some time alone. Now, this concept goes a very long way in terms of our personal spiritual development. So every religion, in fact, when I was in my early 20s, I began to take religion classes on the side. You know, I was a biology major, I was a pre-med student at Wake Forest, and you know, that was all well and good, but I was really fascinated in spiritual studies, esoteric studies, alchemy, and all these things. And at Wake Forest, they had a whole school called the Divinity School. And so they had some top-notch professors and instructors, and I give them a world of credit for the quality of education that they had and they offered. And so even the 100 level classes had some amazing teachers. And when I was taking these religion classes and looking at all the sacred spiritual texts, Michael, do you know what the one commonality between all the major religions were?
Tell me.
It was they all came out of solitude. Every single religion had a central text that they would really look at. For example, in Christianity, the Sermon on the Mount, right, only came after Christ went into the desert for 40 days, right? After he was alone in solitude and then on the road to Damascus, giving the Sermon on the Mount the pinnacle of Christian tradition, right? For example, Islam. You know, the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, went into the cave for how long? 7 days, alone in solitude, and after solitude came out with the pillars of Islam. In the Buddhist tradition, right? Siddhartha Gautama, he does what? He renounces all and gives up all of his belongings. And this is a very wealthy person from a very wealthy family, renounces this, and what does he do? He sits alone in solitude for 3 straight days under the Bodhisattva tree, and he wakes up as the Buddha, the Enlightened One. Moses goes up Mount Sinai alone, has the experience, has the vision of the burning bush, comes down with the commandments. Every single tradition, the individual that created the tenets, all went through a period of isolation and solitude that had the result of what? Spiritual enlightenment. And we could say that there's a difference in the message, there's obviously a difference in the geography, but they all came from a period of solitude. And so one of the healthiest things that we can all do is spend time alone. Spend some time in solitude, and not in your house. Get outside, get back in nature, and reconnect. And in that solitude, with, trust me, regular practice, you will find this. And so, of course, what did I do in college? Started going out every evening, walking the trails, meditating, spending time alone. And that is where I discovered my purpose. That's where I realized this is what I wanted to become. I wanted to become a holistic natural doctor to not only apply these things to my body and accomplish these big picture goals that I had way back then. And again, it's taken me almost 30 years to get to this point. But now here we are, and I'm in such a state of gratitude being able to talk about these things. And so this is the path that I followed, and obviously therefore the path I recommend for everyone, that in that period of solitude, connect to your soul level. Know who you are. What do you love? What are you here to accomplish and achieve? You want to go deeper? Great. Look at your dreams. Record them. Practice meditation and prayer every single day. Quiet the chattering mind down. Get rid of those distractions. And then listen. Listen. Go within and listen to that small, quiet, loving, gentle voice. Practice this on the daily basis, and it will start to talk to you. It's like forging and pioneering the path through the wilderness of distractions that are now more than ever present all around us. And as you walk that path, it becomes more and more tread and easier to access this soul level of who you are. But it's speaking to us all around us, everywhere, through people, through animals, through all these, you know what people think are synchronicity or kind of Oh, that was random. I don't believe in randomness so much as our things that are supposed to be on our pathway. But more importantly is realizing that you are more than this lifetime. And yeah, this is another controversial thing, but you've had multiple lives. As we talked about in the last episode, How to Live Forever, that you're a spiritual being here to have a human experience and not the other way around. And if you are a spiritual being, and if you believe in the concepts of energy and realize that energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it simply transfers from one form to another, that means you are an infinite spiritual being. You are the eternal soul, which means there is no death and never anything to fear about death, just simply a transition going from one chapter to another, through one door to the next room, etc. And so realizing that you've had multiple lifetimes and multiple experiences. So how do you heal your soul? Start and stand right where you are and look at what are the things challenging you? Who are the people challenging you? Do you feel like you're going through the same cycle, the same pattern, the same relationship challenges, whether it be in your romantic, your family, your work relationships? Do you feel like you're stuck? Well, those are highlighting the karmic patterns and the karmic lessons that you have yet to learn and achieve. And again, it's infinite. Meaning, as soon as you figure out this lesson and this growth, you're going to get the next one. And one of my favorite lessons from the Edgar Cayce readings is realizing that all these challenges, they can either be stumbling blocks, and you have to learn it again and again and again till you get it right, or when you learn the lesson and realize the growth in that lesson, and then you can act and make the changes, then they become stepping stones, and that's what gets you to your next level. And when you get the next level, you get the next challenge, and it almost always is going to be tougher. Just like when you're playing a video game. And you go to the next level, the next boss is harder, and the next one is harder, and the next one is harder. That's the whole point, folks. You didn't come here to lay around, be lazy, and just woo, let it all fly. You came here to be challenged. You came here to grow. So embrace that. And more importantly, as you look at the karmic pattern of your past lives, and as you look at the challenges around you, be honest with yourself, be honest with everyone around you, and look at what needs to change within you. Right? Because it's so easy to point the finger. It's so easy to blame others when we have, these challenges, these irritations and frustrations. So look right now at all the things that are triggering you, all the things that are irritating and frustrating you. But now flip the script. Don't look at the person or the environment or the situation. Look within yourself. Look within your own soul and what needs to change within you. What perspective are you holding on to that almost always is connected to some kind of past issue, past memory, past traumas? Heal those traumas. Release those attachments, those addictions, those habits. Overcome them in the present, and that will directly change your future. And now, as you interact with that thing or that person, with those shifts that have taken place within, when you can go back into that environment or back into that relationship and it no longer triggers you, and that same thing that used to really irritate, annoy you, when it no longer does, and now you're just neutral, like, huh, okay. That's when you know you've changed. That's when you know you've healed. And as you do that consistently, that will work to the level of your soul so that you learn the lesson, you gain the growth, you achieve the enlightenment, and now that memory is what you will take with you to your next lifetime, and the next one, and the next one. And that's how we heal the soul, is by identifying the karmic patterns, by looking at the things that trigger you right now in your environment, Number one, realize the power that you have. You can always change your perspective. You can always shift what's going on within you. You have complete control of that. You can't control anything else. So stop trying to control other people. Let it go. The only thing you can control is your thoughts, your words, and what you do in your actions. So focus on that. Change that. And then, as below, so above, as above, so below, you will begin to see the shifts and changes in your environment, or why not do both? Change what's going on within you and change your environment. The easiest way to overcome a habit or an addiction is to remove the cues and triggers. Maybe it is time to change the relationship. Maybe it is time to change your job and your career. I just made one personally, and it was challenging at first, but man, it feels so good when you make the changes and you shift the energy that's around you in your environment, because we always have the choice of where we put ourselves, and the space that we're around and that energy directly affects us. And so the most important thing, again, begin with where you are. Stand right in the place where you are. Look all around you and be honest and look at the things you can control and do that. And don't overwhelm yourself. Just start off with little simple things. One of the books I just finished reading, Atomic Habits by Clear, is a great book, and I recommend it for everybody. And he talks about the two-minute rule of the habit. Anything in terms of big picture changes can all be boiled down to a tiny two-minute increment. So start off with that. Start off with the little simple things. And as you recognize these patterns from your emotional, your mental, and the spiritual aspects of life, realize that this is all coming from that one place, from that soul origin. So find your soul's purpose. Look at these karmic patterns, change the things that you can control, and then the healthiest thing you can do is let the rest of it go. Well, look at that, Michael. Another hour has just flown by.
Yeah, it has.
I know we're having fun here. Quite evident, because time is flying by. So, folks, that's all the time we have for today in this episode. So thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. And check out the other episodes. You'll find them all on doublehcare.org. You can also find holistic health videos, natural health articles. If you sign up for the newsletter, you'll get a weekly wellness update and tip. You'll see the events, live in-person events, and you'll see the research articles, the podcasts, and the things that are coming out if you look at and sign up for the newsletter. And if you want to come to Virginia Beach and schedule a total body tune-up to have your alignment checked, or if you want to do a phone consultation for natural holistic health, you can certainly find that on the website and book now where it says, well, book now. You can also find me on YouTube at Holistic Health Care. You can also find me on social media at Holistic Natural Care. So thank you very much. We are through for the present.